Okay. Well, I don't have a little quiz for you kids today. I'm sorry. We're going to start out a little different. I can only do it when I'm inspired, you know. So this week, the Lord did inspire me when I was preparing this message, but it was in a little bit different way. And I wanted to go back further in the Old Testament, back to Genesis, and just point out a story that I noticed as I was studying 1 Samuel 25 this week. There's a previous story that really parallels well with this one. And hopefully as we go through it, you guys can pick out all the different parallels. But do you guys remember the story of Jacob in Genesis when he, remember he deceived Esau, he deceived his father and got the birthright and all that. And he ended up running away from Esau. Esau, his brother, was ready to kill him for deceiving dad and getting the blessing. So he's fleeing Esau, and he runs to a distant relative named Laban, and he serves Laban. He sees Laban's daughters, and he says, I want to marry that one, Rachel, your daughter Rachel. And Laban deceives Jacob back and mistreats him, in a sense. He gives him a different daughter first to marry, and then he has to work another 7 years for the one that he wanted. Laban also mistreated him by trying to trick him when it came to being his shepherd, working his flocks. And the Lord, through all that, I think was speaking to Jacob. And he was kind of showing Jacob how much Jacob was in Jacob, if that makes sense. Jacob, you're deceitful. You're a trickster. And I'm going to reveal to you how much you needs to come out of you for me to use you for the way that I want. But through all that, the Lord provides protection and blessing for Jacob. And there's a marriage in that story. Jacob, like I said, marries Leah, marries Rachel, has many children, and eventually gets brought back to the place where he left and is honored as God's chosen servant. The Lord's blessing is now going to continue from Abraham through Isaac and now to Jacob and all his sons. Okay, so I titled this whole thought, humility before honor, because most of the time I think this is how the Lord works. Before he honors someone, he has to bring them through a season of humility. He shows them, shows you, shows me how much of us in the flesh is still left in us. And we need to surrender that to the Lord before he can exalt us to this place of glory. So as we read through 1 Samuel 25 today, be thinking of some of these things and look for it, because they kind of repeat as we're reading through the David story today. So what we talked about last week, remember, David's on the run from Saul. Saul's trying to kill him. Saul just hates David, and he's actually even killing people that are helping David along the way. And we saw a couple weeks ago, Saul slaughters 80 priests of the Lord. He's really getting bad. And David, last week we saw David show Saul mercy. Remember, he saw Saul come into the cave where they were hiding, and he cut off a piece of his robe, and then he approached him afterwards and said, look, I could have killed you, and I showed you mercy. Why are you treating me this way? And for a moment, Saul kind of repented. He said, let there be peace between us. And Saul left. And now we get a story. Today, we read a story of another test that David went through when he's in the wilderness, not yet on the throne. So if you'd turn to 1 Samuel 25, and we're going to read through this and stop along the way and discuss it. So 1 Samuel 25, verse 1. I'm just going to read the first verse here. Now Samuel died. You guys remember Samuel, the prophet that Hannah prayed for at the beginning of this book? And she got her son. He was raised up as a prophet, read about his life a bit, and now he died. And all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at his house at Ramah. So again, now, why is the author telling us this? I think, well, partly because it's part of the story. But now think about this. Samuel has kind of been there for Saul, been there for David along the way. He's been the spiritual leader. Now he just died. So now I think the tension's rising a little bit. Like, there's no spiritual leader, in a sense, for Saul or David. What's going to happen next? And it's going to, next week we're going to get into that a little bit. Let's keep reading here. Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Parah. And there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall greet him, 'Peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son David.'" Now, let's just stop there a second. We get introduced to a couple people here, a man and his wife. Did you notice in verse 2, this man is described before he's named? It's almost as if the author is wanting to give us a picture of who, what he's like before we get his name. And what does it say? The man was very rich. And then we get down to verse 3, and it describes also he's harsh and badly behaved. Okay? So, this guy, we're already getting a sense what he's like. Very rich, 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats, very, very rich. And then we also get introduced to his wife, Abigail, and it says she was discerning and beautiful. So not just physical beautiful, but she's also discerning. She has much wisdom, and we're going to see that play out as we continue to read the story. Now what happened here, David and his men, remember, are in the wilderness, on the run from Saul. Nabal has so many flocks that they're scattered all throughout the land. And David and his men are probably scattered out a little bit too. And they're saying, well, as long as we're out here hiding, why don't we make friends with these guys and kind of protect them and watch them? Remember, last week we heard about the Philistines raiding different towns. So the Philistines are out there causing trouble, stealing from the Israelites. David and his men are probably saying, hey, we'll hang out here. We'll protect you. And then after a while, David's saying, well, we've done this, I'm guessing, probably for weeks or months. It would be nice to join in the big feast, right? The big shearing feast. And this culture, you got to remember, is honor and shame. So David is saying, we just honored you, Nabal, by protecting your flocks, protecting your men. David's probably, he was a shepherd before, right? So he's probably helping out there. And you'd think Nabal would be very thankful for that, right? Philistines raiding, nothing's been lost, it says. So you'd think, okay, Nabal's going to bless him. David's coming in peace, he's greeting him. People know who David is. Well, let's read Nabal's response. Let's look at verse 9 and see how Nabal responds to David's request. Could you give us some provisions? Give us, bless us, let us join your feast. So verse 9, when David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. And Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water, my meat that I have killed for my shearers, and give it to men who come from whom I do not know where?" This isn't going to go well, is it? Think about this. God commanded the Israelites, whenever there's a sojourner in your midst, come, take them in, bless them. And here, David's been doing a service for Nabal, and he says, we want to join you in your feast. We want to be blessed by you. Would you give us some provision and blessing? And Nabal's response reveals his character. He knows who David is. Everyone in the land knows who David is, right? He defeated Goliath. He's defeated the Philistines. There's songs about him. Remember the songs that they sing? Saul killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. Nabal knows who David is. But he's a fool. Like his name, what his name means is fool. And we're seeing it here. He's purposely rejecting David. And notice the worldly attitude of Nabal. What verse was it here? When he said seven times in one verse, I or my. Okay? Why should I share my water and my meat and my stuff? You get this attitude. He's not willing to bless others, and especially not the Lord's anointed king. So how does David respond? Verse 12. So David's young men turned away and came back and told him all this. And David said to his men, every man strap on his sword. And every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. So David is insulted. David's very angry. He's get the guns. We're going to town, right? We're going to go show Nabal who we are. Verse 14, but one of the young men, this is one of Nabal's men, told Abigail, Nabal's wife, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm. And we did not miss anything when we were in the fields, as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us, both by night and by day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now therefore know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him. Okay, so Nabal's servant knows the kind of man his master is. He's a worthless man. You can't even go speak to him about these things. So he goes to his wife and says, would you do something? Would you step in? Would you consider this? Because David has really done us a service, and now Nabal refused him. So Abigail's response, verse 18. Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seas of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on donkeys. And she said to her young men, go on before me. Behold, I come after you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. And as she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him. And he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David, and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him. So just again, the author is repeating this. David's angry, and he's ready to go slaughter every male in Nabal's household. And Abigail responds by getting some food ready, right? That's the key to every man's heart. I'm going to prepare him food, and then I'm going to have the hard conversation. Ladies, if you didn't know that, you're welcome. But just for a moment, I think what's going on here, we're seeing David in a negative light. Do you think about that? David's about to act like Saul. We just got a couple chapters back. Saul slaughtered all the priests of the Lord because they had helped David. And now Nabal's unwilling to help David, and David's ready to act like Saul and go slaughter every male in his household. I think we're meant to see David as David and not the Lord's anointed in this section of the story, because David's just wanting to avenge himself and his honor. And Abigail steps in. So she sent the food, she warmed him up. Now we get her speech in verse 23, and just a little trivia. This is one of the longest speeches by a woman in Scripture. So let's read this in verse 23. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She's humbling herself very low before David. She fell at his feet and said, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as Yahweh lives, and as your soul lives, because Yahweh has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. Let them be a fool. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for Yahweh will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of Yahweh. And evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living, in the care of Yahweh your God. And the lives of your enemies shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. And when Yahweh has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when Yahweh has dwelt well with my Lord, then remember your servant." Abigail gives this speech and postures herself very humbly. She's speaking about something as if it already happened, even though David's still on his way to go slaughter Nabal, right? She's speaking as if it already happened. The Lord has restrained you. I think she knows that in her humility, the Lord's using her to stop David from a great sin. David, you're supposed to be the picture of the promised Messiah. And if you go do this, you're no different than the worldly king Saul. Don't do this, David. The Lord's sending me to stop you. She reminds David of the true fight. Continue to fight the Lord's battles. Let him use you righteously. Be humble and serve, David. Don't seek after your own vengeance. Don't go killing people just because your pride was hurt. And then she says, "Remember me." When you've surrendered to the Lord and you've stopped, remember me and bless me. Verse 32, how does David respond to Abigail? You got to remember, he's a tough guy. Just been dishonored. He's got 400 soldiers with him. And David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, Yahweh, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you. You have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male." Then David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition." Again, I think the Lord's at work here. The Lord sent Abigail, and the Lord softened David's heart to hear the message. Stop, David. Don't sin. Don't do this. So David responds in humility. Let's keep reading. Verse 36. Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. Remember, he's really rich. He knows how to throw a party. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. So what Nabal did was a great sin against David, but it didn't matter to God. God didn't want David to just go out and avenge himself. the Lord can fight this battle. And the Lord did. He judged Nabal for his foolishness and for his sin and struck him dead 10 days later. Let's keep reading. Finish the chapter. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has avenged the insult I received at the hand of Nabal and has kept back his servant from wrongdoing. The Lord has returned the evil of Nabal on his own head." Then David sent and spoke to Abigail to take her as his wife. When the servants of David came to Abigail at Carmel, they said to her, "David has sent us to you to take you to him as his wife." Now notice her response, church. And she rose and bowed with her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your handmaid is a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." And Abigail hurried and rose and mounted a donkey, and her 5 young women attended her. She followed the messengers of David and became his wife. David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and both of them became his wives. Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who was of Galim. Okay, just a note, we'll talk about that last verse there and then go back. This is going to bring disaster later on in the story. David's starting to accumulate wives, and it's not going to turn out well for him or his family. He's not listening to the word of the Lord. Remember in Deuteronomy, the Lord said, whenever Israel gets a king, don't acquire a lot of gold and silver, don't acquire a lot of horses, don't acquire a lot of wives. And we're seeing David as a human here. But just back up here, because I think the Lord is still at work in the wives that David is getting. David now takes the widow Abigail as his wife. He's going to provide for her and take her into his home. Abigail rejected the foolishness of her husband, and the Lord judged her husband and now provides a new husband for her. Abigail's response is one of humility. When in verse 41 there, she says, "Behold, your handmaid is a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." She's putting herself so humble, so low. She's saying, I'm willing to serve. And I don't think this necessarily means physically, that she's going to physically wash the feet of David's servants. But I think spiritually, what we saw earlier, she was washing their feet in a sense. She was keeping David and his men clean from blood guilt. She was getting down low and humbling herself and serving David and his men by stopping him. She was washing their spiritual feet. And we're going to get to that again here in just a minute. But I think what we're seeing is surrender. Just what we were praying earlier in our prayer time. Are we willing to surrender? Okay? So humility before honor. Again, I think this picture is showing us there's a lot of fleshly David still left in David. He was right to be mad. He was dishonored. But the extreme that he took it, and so quickly, is very fleshly, very sinful. So again, just as we're reading the story of David, we're seeing a repeat, in a sense, of the Jacob story. David flees from Saul. David serves Nabal. David makes a request, "Hey, will you provide for us? Will you bless me and my men?" And he's mistreated by Nabal. And yet the Lord provides protection and blessing through Abigail. And then we get the marriage. And then David is continuing to be on that path to be honored as God's chosen servant king. As I said earlier, had he gone and slaughtered Nabal's whole family, he wouldn't have been a good picture of Israel's Messiah. He would have been just another Saul. Okay? So humility before honor. The Lord's at work. The Lord's showing this story again and saying, "I'm at work. I'm going to provide the true king someday." And we're getting a picture of it in this story. Psalm 5, 4 through 6. David wrote this psalm. And I wonder, after studying this week, if he had this story of what happened to him and Abigail in mind when he wrote this. Just look at these few verses. For you are not a God who delights in wickedness. Evil may not dwell with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all evildoers. You destroy those who speak lies. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man. The bloodthirsty person cannot be God's the king. Does that make sense? The Messiah to come, because the Lord rejects all sin. And we get this picture, I think, of David. Yes, David, you're a shadow of the true king to come, but you're not the one. You can't be, because you were bloodthirsty. You were ready to go and slaughter all of Nabal's house. You think of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. It's what happens in the heart, right? So even though David was stopped physically from doing it, he resisted physically from doing it, in his heart, he still slaughtered Nabal in his house. That's where his heart was at. So we, as readers of these stories in Samuel and in the Psalms, we're still anticipating, is there one to come who's not like this? We still need one with no wickedness and no evil and no deceit and no thirst for blood. Turn with me to John 13. Remember verse 41 in the Samuel 25 chapter. Abigail humbles herself and says, I am here to serve you, David, and your men. I'm here to wash your feet. And we get to John 13, and we get, in a sense, a repeat of this story, but it's not happening by some nameless servant. This is happening by God's anointed king, Jesus. So John 13. Now before the feast, here again, there's a feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. So here again, we're going to have someone who's about to mistreat Jesus. And he laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, he tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered him, what I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand. Peter said to him, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I do not wash you, you have no share with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, the one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you. For he knew who was to betray him, and was why he said, not all of you are clean. When he had washed their feet, and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Let's just pause there. Jesus, the Lord's true anointed king, took the position of a humble servant and washed his disciples' feet. And remember when Peter's like, well, if you're going to do that, then wash all of me. And Jesus is saying, just calm down, Peter. I've already declared you clean, right? But I think that's a picture of us, in a sense. If we are in Christ, Jesus has declared us clean. But think about our daily lives. We still get our feet dirty in sin, don't we? We still need that reminder from the servant king that he takes care of all that daily stuff too. And he is helping to cleanse us of our daily crime. He keeps us holy by serving us, by washing our feet, taking that sin. Even though I'm declared clean, I still get myself in a dirty mess. And he says, I'll take care of that too. And you know how else I'm going to do it? Through your people. I'm going to send my people to serve one another and help keep each other's feet clean. Just like Abigail offered to do to David. Just like Jesus modeled for his disciples. Just like Jesus commanded his disciples, now go and do it to one another. I think it's more than just that symbolic, hey, I'm going to serve you in however way you need. It's I'm willing to serve you by helping keep you clean, to keep you holy. I'm going to be so part of your life. I'm going to watch your life and say, hey, I'm noticing this pattern. It looks like you're bloodthirsty. It looks like you're seeking after this sin that you don't need to chase after. And I'm here to remind you. I'm here to serve you. I'm here to help you be holy. Do you guys see this picture in the Samuel story and now in Jesus' story? So a couple questions for us as we close here. Think about our lives. Are we more like Nabal or are we more like Abigail? I'd like to, you know, we probably all immediately think, well, I'm like Abigail, but just let's stop and think. How many of us actually have Nabal tendencies? This is my stuff. This is mine, right? I don't want to surrender this part of my life to Jesus. Or we can be like Abigail and humble ourselves and say, Lord, the blame is on me, and I want to be here and surrender to you. And then likewise, I want us to be thinking, are we washing each other's feet, spiritually speaking? Are we in each other's lives enough to know what's going on? How can I pray for you? How can I serve you? How can I help you in your walk of holiness? I pray that we would be a church that does that well. Amen. So we are going to have communion now. What a great morning to do it. Let's be humble before the Lord and be humble before one another. So as that gets passed out, I just wanted to say that this is for believers only. Jesus commanded his followers to keep this and practice this until his return. As we take this, we're meant to think back on his death and resurrection. We're meant to think back on his redeeming work in his people through his Holy Spirit until his glorious return.